Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 29 of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast, brought to you by TuesdayNightMovies.com. I'm your host, Billy, and Dave has off this week, but with me is someone that if you listen to last week's episode of the podcast, you will no doubt recognize, my favorite Dave replacement, Nick.
Hello.
How are you doing, Nick?
I'm all right. I wish I was still at the beach.
I wish I was still at the beach, too. Yeah, unfortunately, listeners, we are back home from the Tuesday Night Comics Beach House, back in our respective locations. I'm in sweltering New York City. Nick, you're down in South Carolina, right?
Even more sweltering, Charleston.
Does Charleston have a beach that you could go to if you needed to?
Charleston has three beaches within 10 minutes of my house.
I suddenly don't feel bad for you anymore.
It's really not that bad. And then there are other beaches a short distance away.
The closest beach to me, I believe, is Coney Island, which I've been to recently. It's fun to bike to, but it's always weird when you see a diaper in the water while you're waving.
Yeah, that's gross.
Yeah, super gross. That's New York for you. So this week, we're going to be talking about new comics that are coming out Wednesday, July 23rd, 2014. And, Nick, I don't know about you, but I have a comic I'm super excited about, and that is G.I. Joe versus Transformers, or Transformers versus G.I. Joe number one, put out by IDW, and co-written by Tom Scioli and John Barber, with art by Tom Scioli. I am super excited about this comic book.
I am, too. It was one of my favorite free comic book day offerings.
Yes, and thank you so much. I only got to read this because you were nice enough to pick it up for me on Free Comic Book Day, because they do not have Free Comic Book Day in Spain, as it turns out.
I am super nice.
You are, and I reward you by not visiting you.
Exactly.
But yeah, look, if you got $4 to spend at a comic book store this week, I say Transformers versus G.I. Joe number one. Choose your cover. Personally, I'm going for the variant blank cover because I want Todd Knock to do a sketch on it at New York Comic Con.
I want Todd Knock to do a sketch over the Rob Liefeld variant cover.
Make this pretty. I wonder if he would do that since he used to work for Rob Liefeld. I think he got his start at Extreme Studios.
I don't know. So, like, seriously, I've been going through I don't know if it's because I'm getting older or what, but like the comics that I liked a lot, like the X-Force when I was really little, now I kind of want to look at those again. So I may or may not have bought them out of like 50-cent bins recently.
Have it? Did you?
Yeah, on Free Comic Book Day, I bought a couple from the store I went to, because why not?
Back when now Liefeld's run of X-Force or like the post-Liefeld?
No, like the first couple, like literally like the first like two issues.
Oh, nice. Which trading card did you get?
Cable? Deadpool? I picked, the one of the whole team.
Oh. Was there a whole team trading card? I don't remember that one. Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
I think you're messing with me. Are you looking?
I don't know. I'm going to look it up.
Well, and while we're talking about Transformers versus G.I. Joe, while Nick's looking that up,
they had just a team card.
Wow. I remember everybody wanted the Cable card, and at my local store, you had to buy, like, all five versions of the comic if you wanted the Cable card variant.
That sounds weird.
And like a sucker, I did.
Yeah, there's X-Force, the team, there's Cable, there is Sunspot and Gideon, and there's Shatterstar, and I don't know what the fifth one was.
And it was definitely, I think there was definitely a Deadpool card.
Was Deadpool like super popular then? He'd just been in the one issue.
He was just in the one issue, I think. Maybe he wasn't. I could have sworn.
Oh, no, there is. I just saw, like, I just recognized, I remember I saw like a image of what I think was the image on the card. I think you're right. I think it was Deadpool.
Yeah. Who knew that Deadpool would become so popular then?
I feel like that happened. I don't remember a time in my life where I didn't read comics, but there's a chunk of time where stuff happened. Like, all of a sudden, Deadpool is a hugely popular character, and the first issue or his first appearance goes for like over $100 and some.
Yeah.
And I don't know when that happened, but it was some during a period of time when I didn't really pay attention to stuff like that.
I think it was around the time that Joe Kelly started writing Deadpool. You know, even though Deadpool was created by Rob Liefeld and Fabian Nicieza, it was really Joe Kelly's run on Deadpool that made Deadpool Deadpool. Like, before that, he was just a bad Deathstroke ripoff, but then Joe Kelly is the one who really added the humor to the comic. So I think it was when he and McGinnis were working on the book in the late 90s. That's when the character started gaining popularity, and also when his first appearance started going for more and more money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just came out of nowhere. I was like, really? That? Oh, all right.
Sure. Yeah, I was surprised by that, too. Yeah, he just, you know, gained more and more popularity. Although my brother is a huge, huge Deadpool fan.
Well, I think that was one of the first, like, one of the times I realized it. I think it was the first time I met your brother at New York Comic Con, like, a million years ago. Like, he has, like, a hoodie.
Right.
And I was just like, wait, what, Deadpool? They make hoodies? And people, like... like recognize and not because all I remember is he was in that first issue of New Mutants that he was in, and then the second issue of X-Force, and then that was it. Like, I don't remember him really being in any other comics when I was reading those comics back then.
Yeah, he started making regular appearances in X-Force. I think after Liefeld left, he had like a romance with this weird romance with Siren, Banshee's daughter.
All right.
And then graduated to his own series where they continued that. But yeah, that the Joe Kelly run on X-Force is definitely worth picking up and reading, either if Marvel ever does a digital sale on it, or if you're a Marvel Digital Unlimited subscriber, I believe it's in there.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's issue number 12. It's either issue number 10 or issue number 12 of his Deadpool. They actually have Deadpool go back in time, and he inhabits the body of Peter Parker. So they take an old Spider-Man comic that John Romita did the art for,
uh-huh,
and just re-letter it so that it's Deadpool, like, making fun of everything that's going on in the comic, like all the 60s tropes, like, you know, MJ and Gwen just breaking out into, like, dance and stuff. Yeah. He makes fun of Harry Osborn's hair, like his Brillo pad hair. Yeah, I think that issue is one of my favorite comics of all time.
That sounds pretty fun.
Yeah, it is. It's Deadpool number 12, and you can't... Oh, no, I'm sorry, Deadpool number 11. And you can't mistake it because it looks like the cover of Amazing Fantasy 15. but yeah, honestly, one of the best comic books ever. So, but back to G.I. Joe versus Transformers. I read an interesting interview with Tom Scioli this week that said this comic book almost never happened because he retired from comics. And,
really?
Yeah, he retired. He'd been, you know, self-publishing, and he just felt it wasn't working out, and he, just decided to retire and just do his day job, and that lasted an entire week, and he decided that he hadn't been trying hard enough. So he actually, at the end of the week of his retirement from comics, quit his day job and decided to do comics full time and started sending submissions to like every company basically. And I think he submitted a story idea to IDW through like their letters column because that was the only contact he had there. but yeah, and then when it came time for this comic, they actually approached him about it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and it's been getting so much buzz. I'm really happy about that because...
Yeah, I'm excited. I was actually... I didn't get a copy from Free Comic Book Day. I read yours, but I picked up a copy at Heroes Con because he was there. And there was... I guess that explains it, because there was a book of his that I wanted to get, that American Barbarian book that came out a few years ago, and he didn't have any, and I didn't have a chance to talk to him about it, but I'm guessing that it looks like it's out of print. But yeah, I wanted to get that, but he didn't have it.
Yeah, and he has a chapter in this this book that Eric Larson is putting out called Giant Size Kung Fu Bible Stories. Have you heard about
this? I just saw that today. It's the San Diego exclusive or something.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get a copy of this because I just love the title of it. And it uses like the fonts that you'd expect for like giant size. Has like a shadow box, and Kung Fu is done in this quasi Asian comic book font, while not looking like Asian type at all. And then Bible Stories, of course, is done in Gothic.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just looks insane. And he's got a copy of, he was selling copies of it. He was at a con in Philly this weekend called the Philly BBQ Con. Or BB Con with the Q spelling out con. But anyway, they had barbecue food, and like Box Brown was there, Tom was there. I saw pictures of this. I'm like, it looks so laid back and so cool. I wish I could have been there.
But you were at the beach.
But I was at the beach, so I can't complain too much. So what else are you looking forward to this week?
Well, this week has a new issue of Saga, which is always a great thing.
I really got to catch up on Saga.
Yeah, I finished I was two issues behind, and I read them both at the beach. Nice. I am also really excited about Gru versus Conan number one, which is a book that's been in progress for like, it feels like at least maybe even a decade, but definitely 5 or 6 years, I think.
Really?
Well, they announced it. I don't even remember when they announced it, but they solicited the first issue, and then Sergio Aragonés got, I think he hurt his back or he got sick. Something happened to where he wasn't able to finish it, because I think they were gonna wait till all of it was done before they put it out. But anyway, it got held up. So, but it's finally coming out, and it looks like this is actually going to be this miniseries, which I think is four issues, and then there's going to be another Gru series that's like 12 issues, and so it'll be like a good year and a half of new Gru, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, I actually used this comic to prove a point about Sergio Aragonés, and that was that he isn't dead.
who was saying he was dead?
Greg was.
Greg Crandler?
Yes, exactly. I think you pronounced his name perfectly.
He was Nindler?
He's like, oh yeah, you know, it's too bad Sergio Aragonés died. And I'm like, I don't think he's dead. He's like, I think he is. And then I saw, I think Sergio doing an interview about this Gru comic that was kind of the Gru versus Conan comic that was coming out. And I forwarded it to Greg, and I was like, I don't think he's dead. I think Greg might have still not have believed me 100%. So I'm happy to hear that this comic is finally coming out, and I'm also happy that Sergio is still alive.
Me too.
Yeah, I can't find what I actually sent to Greg, but that was basically the gist of that story.
That he's still alive.
Yeah. So you've got Saga, this Transformers versus G.I. Joe, Gru versus Conan, and then we also have Tuki number one coming out. Tuki Saves the Earth or something like that.
Tuki Saves the Human?
Tuki Fights for Earth. I believe that's what it's called. Hey, wait a second.
Tuki Friendship is Magic.
Tuki.
Save the Humans.
Tuki Save the Humans. Okay. Yeah, and I read what the... Now, this issue, a life hack for anyone who is planning on buying this but is short on money. You could read this basically for free on Jeff Smith's website. Because this is reprinting what had originally been a webcomic, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And it's good. I read what would be the first issue of this. If you are a fan of Bone, you're... Or Rassel, you should definitely check this out. I have not finished Rassel yet. I feel bad about that.
It's good. I have not read the colored version. I haven't read the collection of it, but I read it as it was ongoing, and I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I need to just sit down with it. I have the collection signed by Jeff Smith with a nice Rassel sketch at the front of it. And I read the first issue, put it down to read something else, and I haven't been able to pick it back up yet. But I will read it. This I promise. Now let's
Speaking
see.
Of things that you haven't read.
Okay.
This week also, I think, it's not on this list, but it's going to be at San Diego, is the Hellboy Artist Edition.
Oh, yeah. I saw that that IDW is putting that out, and then San Diego is, they're doing like a variant cover for San Diego, right?
Yeah.
Is it just a variant cover, or is it got like a sketch in it? Or
I'm not sure. I've just seen that it's a different cover. It looks to be because the book, it has, I guess, the first batch of the Hellboy in Hell series. So they split that up into, I guess, like they took a break in between in the middle of the series. So this is reprinting that. And mm-hmm. that just has like one of the regular covers, but it looks like the San Diego cover also is a older Hellboy image, because the book also has some like odds and ends from, like, I think it has the very first like Hellboy short story, and I think it has the pages from his first appearance in John Byrne's Next Men. So it's not just the most recent miniseries. I think it's got other stuff. So I think the cover is one of those images.
Oh, okay.
Because it's definitely like a bigger, sort of bulkier version of Hellboy, and he doesn't really draw him like that at all anymore.
Hmm. Now, IDW actually has a couple of artist editions coming out for San Diego Comic Con, because they're also doing the Dave Gibbons Watchmen Artifact Edition.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They're doing like a special dinner thing.
There are only 25 tickets are available to this, because that's going to have a variant cover with like a special variant, I think, painted Rorschach cover. It's not like an original painting, but original to this book. Only 25 copies will be available ever, but it's $500. Now,
I think he also does a sketch in it. So all of a sudden it becomes like a not as outlandish price.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. It includes a bound-in signature plate that Dave will design and do small sketches on. So, and it includes dinner.
Like, so, depending on what the food is, I mean, this pays for itself.
Like, as long as they're not going to Chipotle. If they're going to a nice restaurant in the Gaslamp District, that could pay for, you know, that is not exorbitant. And, of course, it is sold out.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, it's Chipotle.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, there's a $25 fee on top of the $500 ticket, but it's sold out. Also coming out from IDW this weekend, not coming out this week, is Ragnarok number one, which is like Walt Simonson's new take on Thor, which I am super excited about.
Know that existed.
Yeah, so he's doing like his own creator-owned take on Thor, and the Thor in Ragnarok looks like the cover of a heavy metal album.
Nice.
Yeah, it is. This is not Marvel Comics Thor. This is basically Ragnarok has happened, but for some reason Thor wasn't there, and Thor shows up in Asgard, and everybody's dead, and I think Thor is pissed. Thor also has a skull for a face. Yeah, so this should be cool. Yeah, I will be picking up the regular version of that post San Diego Comic Con.
Nice.
Is it
an ongoing series, or is it a...
I believe it's an ongoing series.
Okay.
And I was surprised to find out, I believe Transformers versus G.I. Joe, unlike every other Transformers versus G.I. Joe comic, is also an ongoing series.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think it's a limited series. I'm pretty sure it's ongoing. In which case, awesome. Now, I could be wrong. Yeah. But yeah, so that kind of and that. Anything else coming out this week that caught your eye? It seems like the week of Nick.
I don't know. It seems I thought there was more, but that's pretty much it.
I feel like we picked the right week to have you on. All we needed was a new issue of Sex Criminals, and you'd be set.
Yeah, other than, I don't know, there's Savage Dragon coming out, which I buy, but it's not like a thing that jumps out and I'm like, I've got to get it. It's the best. It's just something I've been buying for 20 years of my life, apparently.
Speaking of Eric Larson, he's doing the cover of he's doing a variant cover on Superman number 33 this week as part of the Batman 75th anniversary cover series.
I did see that, and it occurred, like, I love the fact that it's Superman in his old costume and Batman in his old costume. And I recently bought those, like, the Batman Black and White and the Adventures of Superman books that are, like, made up of the stories that were, I guess, digital first. Yeah. I picked up the two issues of those because of the Chris Somney stories that they had. And I think it's kind of great that even though they've been pushing this New 52 thing, they don't seem to mind much when people draw the old versions of the characters.
Yeah, I think as long as it's not in New 52 continuity, they're okay with it.
Yeah.
Because an early version of John Romita's first issue of Superman had an old Daily Planet cover on the wall, and I think it was like Death of Superman and Superman Returns, and it had him in his classic costume. And by the time the issue actually came out, they re-inked it so that it looked more like the New 52 costume.
Gross.
Oh, and here's also why it's the week of Nick. It is Batman week, probably, at your local comic book store. I know a lot of comic book stores here in New York City are taking part in this. You can get a Batman 75th Anniversary Detective Comics number 27 Special Edition for free. And what's cool about it is that Bill Finger is actually credited on the cover. Detective Comics number 27, the Batman story in it, reprinted by Bob Kane and Bill Finger. And then Brad Meltzer, Brian Hitch, and a few other creators, including Scott Snyder and Sean Murphy, are also going to have original stories in there, I believe. And
is this the story, the Scott Snyder and Sean Murphy story from the other, like the recent Detective Comics 27?
I don't know. Maybe. Because
I wanted to read that, but I
didn't want to pay $9 for it.
Well, that was part of it. As tempting as that horrible Frank Miller cover was, I just didn't really want to.
Oh, where Catwoman was pooping out her tail.
Yeah. So that's a plus. Although I did read, I'm curious, I've read some stuff online, and apparently, I don't know if it's actually the story from Detective Comics 27, because I read that Brad Meltzer wrote new text and dialogue for the story, right, and Chip Kidd took that and incorporated it into the original art from the story. And that sounds kind of not great, but I don't know. maybe it has both?
Yeah, I don't know. That'll be interesting.
But I don't know. It's not like I haven't read Detective Comics number 27 a bunch of times. In fact, I think at this point, if you came to my house, there you could get that story at least three different ways in my house.
Wow. That's impressive. Although I could probably say the same thing about Amazing Fantasy 15.
Yeah. It gets reprinted a lot.
Yeah, that's very true. If only there was a Steve Ditko artist edition, that's what I want.
He would do it, but it's all like scraps because
he's busy using his original art.
He uses his original art.
Yeah, he uses them as cutting boards.
Cutting boards.
Yeah. That's ridiculous. So before the podcast started, Nick and I were looking at a variant cover to Transformers versus G.I. Joe, the one by Ed Piskor, and we were trying to figure out who the mobster-looking guy was, and I was sure it was a G.I. Joe figure, and we found out it was Headman, And Nick, for some reason, I can't stop looking at Google images of what might be the worst G.I. Joe figure ever.
I've never heard of this. I was super in the tank for G.I. Joe. Like, I never really cared about Transformers growing up. I had a couple Transformers and I always broke them. Yeah. I remember I had the guy that turned into the fighter jet and he broke on the way home from the store.
Oh, Nick, I love that you say the guy who turned into the fighter jet. There was easily like a half dozen of them that do that.
It was not, I don't think it was the most popular one. I think it was just another guy that turned into like an F-16 or something.
Right.
But I broke him. I don't think I ever got him to actually transform. I broke him almost immediately. And for the rest of my life, I had a fighter jet toy with a robot head like on the top of it. Like, because I could never get him to really transform. But anyway, I was always into G.I. Joe, and I've never heard of Headman. Ever.
Yeah, I think I did hear Headman, one, because I owned the figure, and I found the original packaging, and I was like, oh yeah, I totally have this guy. I think it helped that I had a younger brother, and you didn't, and my younger brother is also heavily into G.I. Joe, so our G.I. Joe buying years probably went longer than you did.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah, because I remember Headman was the leader of the Headhunters, and the Headhunter is actually still one of the coolest-looking G.I. Joe figures.
I guess technically the Google image that I found, it said 92, and yeah. I was pretty much in high school then, so I guess...
Yeah, me too. I was busy not dating girls then.
Me too!
But look up G.I. Joe Headhunter and find one of the coolest, in my opinion, looking bad guys in the G.I. Joe universe. It's like if Henry Rollins became a Cobra agent. Because he's got like a full face mask, but he's also wearing spiked leather.
Oh, I know who that guy is. I know that guy. I like his shoulder pad.
Yeah, I love that it says on the package, evil headhunters, as opposed to, you know, the good guy headhunters.
Good guys.
We're the nice headhunters. Yeah, so that's the Headman. And like I said, for some reason, I just keep scrolling through this Google image page, and I'm like, oh my god. And they release multiple versions of him, because there's one where he's wearing just a completely mustard-colored suit.
Well, nothing says terror like a mustard-colored suit.
Yeah, especially with, like, a little pencil goatee and a domino mask. If you're in the Mafia, why would you wear a domino mask? That doesn't make any sense. And why would you wear a skin-tight zoot suit? That's the opposite of what a zoot suit is. Jump, Jive, and Whale Headman. Amazingly, it predated the rebirth of Swing becoming really popular by like 4 or 5 years.
Well, there was also that, do you remember the it was a toy line called Cops?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
C-O-P-S, or it stands for something, I don't know. But like they were all like cyborg police.
Yes.
And there was one villain that was wearing like a purple pinstripe suit that carried a violin case or a guitar case that had a gun in it, but his chest would open up in a gun too. And that's what I think of when I see a picture of Headman.
I think I own that figure, despite not collecting the Cops toy line.
I had that figure too. And I remember I bought the comics and they were drawn by Bart Sears, who drew the Justice League books. I think he designed a lot of the figures. But, yeah, he did Justice League Europe, I think, and all those wizard, how to draw comics articles.
Yeah. Wow. As I'm looking through this this stuff about Headman, apparently he did appear in the G.I. Joe comic, and so did somebody who looks just like Cable, but apparently worked for Cobra. G.I. Joe comic got really weird after I stopped buying it.
Yeah, I stopped.
There's a guy on the cover of G.I. Joe number 124. There's a picture of Headman in his silly black and gold suit. And there's a guy who has a scar and a cyborgy eye just like Cable, white hair just like Cable. And his whole outfit is like, I'm Cable.
What year was it?
Oh,
there he is. What year was that?
It had to be the 90s.
92, so Cable already existed.
Yeah. Oh, wait, that guy's a copy of Cable? I can't believe it. Who copied Cable in the 1990s? Oh, wait.
Well, I would think it would be the other way around, possibly.
Wait, you think Rob Liefeld would rip somebody off?
No.
Ridiculous.
But yeah, the G.I. Joe comics, the older I get, because I really liked them growing up, and because like I said, I love G.I. Joe, but I was always, as an adult, I guess, kind of impressed by how they were made, because Larry Hama, who wrote all of them and continues to write them because they picked up the numbering when they switched to IDW and like restarted it. He was like a Vietnam veteran and knew like all of this stuff about the military and was writing this comic where essentially every 12 months they would say, hey, we're making some new toys. We need you to work these guys into the stories.
Right.
So like, but he was able to kind of like, I mean, a lot of that stuff is super legit in terms of military stuff, and that's kind of awesome because every 12 months he had to work in Chuckles or
Tomax, like, and Zaymot.
Yeah, or Tomax and Zaymot, or hey, we've got an idea about Serpentor. You've got to put that in the comic.
And actually, the Serpentor story in the comic was so much better than the Serpentor story in the cartoon.
I still remember there was like a chunk of stories where Snake Eyes. No, it wasn't Snake Eyes. It was Quick Kick and Stalker.
Trapped behind enemy lines, right?
What?
Where they were trapped behind enemy lines and they were disavowed by the U.S. government.
Yeah, they got sent to a gulag.
Yeah.
And Snake Eyes like snuck in and broke them out. Snake Eyes and Scarlet snuck in and broke them out. And that chunk of like comics are still some of my favorite comics.
Yeah, no, that's the defining part of my childhood. I remember those issues very well. As well as, I believe it was like G.I. Joe, maybe 109 or like 108, where the Saw Viper basically, that was issue 110. And this was, I remember, like, just being shocked by it, because basically, it's G.I. Joe and Cobra go to war, and the Saw Viper, this Viper with a giant machine gun, basically cuts through a lot of the Joe team, and a lot of guys don't make it. Like, Doc dies, I forget who else dies. I remember Doc dying and being shocked by it. But he just mows down, like, a lot of, and that was, I think, the Casualties of War storyline. And then on the cover, like, they would actually put how many Joes had died so far in the in that story.
Weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. But I just remember, like, that was G.I. Joe's getting real, you know? And, like, it's not just, like, guys shooting at each other with lasers and they can't hit each other. Like,
The comics were never guys shooting at each other with lasers.
No, that's true. So that was issue 109. That was so right before that Saw Viper issue where he just, like, mows down a bunch of people. And issue 109, Seven had already died. I think Quick Kick might die.
What?
Maybe not. I know Doc definitely dies. No, I don't think Quick Kick dies. Yeah, I think I made that up. But, Quick Kick lives and basically, like, grabs the gun and goes psycho on a bunch of Vipers after all his friends die.
Remember that time we did a podcast about the comics coming out tomorrow and then talked about G.I. Joe for, like, a half hour?
I take it back. Quick Kick did die in that. I was right the first time around. Yeah, remember that time we did a podcast and all we did was talk about G.I. Joe? It was great. Best episode ever. I hope you guys liked the special all G.I. Joe episode of this podcast. So we did have other topics we were going to talk about. Nick, you and I both bought the Jack Kirby Artist Edition.
We did, and I love it so much, and I wish they would just keep making all of them for him.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I'm just looking through it right now and have been looking through it like while we've been talking. And it's so awesome just to see his art in full size. Especially, like, the splash pages are just amazing.
Well, I've been often on buyer of the Jack Kirby collector, and for a while there, they made those. I guess they weren't technically actual size, but
they were big.
Yeah, they're big. They reprint a ton of pencil stuff, and I just kind of fell in love with it. And but this nice, I love the New God stuff. I would probably go and say it's my favorite Jack Kirby stuff. I really love the Fantastic Four, but I think it took a long time for that stuff to kind of get going. So I think the New Gods is probably my favorite thing that he's ever done. So it's great to have that to look at.
Yeah, no, just even from the first page onward, just that first page splash that's like post-apocalyptic old gods fighting each other. Yeah, and then even the second page is just pure Kirby with the raw energy that comes off the page. But yeah, that is great.
And what's awesome to think about is that he never thumbnailed anything. He sat down at his table.
Wow.
Started in the corner and then just went.
With no shirt on.
With no shirt on, smoking a cigar.
And just went at it, huh? That's amazing. Because if you look at this first page of New Gods number one, or Orion Fights for Earth, just like how busy that page is, that he just like sat down and went at that. That's just nuts. I've actually never read the whole New Gods saga. When DC reprinted them in like the Jack Kirby Fourth World omnibuses, I kept meaning to buy those and I didn't. I kind of regret not doing
it. I would actually say that you should put that ahead of Hellboy in your reading list.
Wow, because this episode almost, before it became the G.I. Joe podcast, was going to be the Nick chastises Billy for not reading Hellboy yet podcast. Somehow I managed to get around that.
You did.
Oops, I shouldn't have brought it up.
No, it's all right.
I
don't understand how you can let something like that sit for 20 years, literally 20 years. But if you don't love joy in your life, that's fair.
Now, should I read BPRD alongside Hellboy?
Here's the thing. BPRD for a long stretch of time has been, I would say in terms of like, it splits off. They split off because at a certain point, Hellboy quits. Spoiler alert, it's not a big spoiler. But they split off. So Hellboy isn't, pretty much when BPRD starts its own stories, Hellboy is no longer part of it. So it focuses on like Abe Sapien and Liz Sherman and some of the other characters. And there was a period of time where BPRD was probably the best book Mike Mignola was involved in, even though Hellboy is like fantastic. But it was kind of like, I would read reviews of it, and I agree with them where they were saying it was a lot like if you were buying Marvel comics like in 1963 or 1964, or where everything, there was like a world that was just kind of like building. And it was all happening in like one book, and stuff would happen to where, you know, something happens and it sticks. It's like cities at this point, they've kind of moved past like the initial like chunk of stories into another sort of gigantic story, and like there are entire cities that are gone and just stuff, but like everything that happens sticks. It's like the world is getting messed up, there are all these creatures everywhere. It's really great. You don't have to read it because they're not really connected.
Ah, I see.
But if you like good comics and are looking for more of them to read, I would recommend them, especially the chunk pretty much like when it's Mike Mignola and John Arcudi writing and then Guy Davis like drawing all of it. He's since left, and they've kind of switched to a series of miniseries, but they're numbered sequentially now. So it's like you buy BPRD now, and it's like issue 100 and something. So they've kind of switched to that format, but the run that's drawn by Guy Davis is pretty much amazing. They're really good.
Okay. Yeah, I thought they were both, Hellboy and BPRD were done by Mike Mignola, and that's Shows you how little I know about both these.
Yeah, I mean, he basically would write them or co-write them and draw like the covers and stuff. And he actually stopped drawing Hellboy for a little while. He just wrote it, and then Duncan Fegredo drew it for a couple of years, and then the recent stories that he's been doing are actually the first stories he's drawn in actually quite a while, I guess. It's been a few years.
Yeah, so I see, like, I'm on Amazon right now, and I see that I could buy the Hellboy Volume 1 trade paperback for $12.74 and Volume 2 for $15.23. So that's like $27.50 altogether, let's say. Then for another $1.50 more, I could just buy the Hellboy Library Edition of Volume 1, which has basically the first two trade paperbacks in it and looks like a much prettier comic.
Yeah, the Library Edition is great.
Yeah, I like the covers.
They're bigger. They're much bigger. And they match the Art of Hellboy book that came out a long time ago. They kind of have like a fabric-y cover stock, I guess. I don't know what the official term is, but it's not
I think fabric-y is right.
Fabric-y.
Maybe cloth.
Yeah, there you go. That's what we're looking for.
I think we'll stick with fabric-y.
And they're great. I just recently decided to get those rather than the trade paperbacks, and I'm slowly rebuying them. But I am okay with essentially double dipping because Hellboy is the greatest.
I wouldn't know, sadly.
That's apparently not.
And I've never even seen the Hellboy movies either.
The first Hellboy movie is pretty fun. The second Hellboy movie is okay. Neither one of them are very... I don't know. The first one like grabs a lot from the first story.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron Perlman is actually great as Hellboy, but they're hit or miss. I think they're on Netflix if you've got a couple hours to kill.
Yeah, I've been meaning to read those. Watch those. So yeah, Jack Kirby. So you say I should read Jack Kirby's Fourth World Omnibi before I jump into the Hellboys, eh?
I mean, you could do them concurrently. It's fine. Just depends on how much time you have.
That is true. And as the other comics in my apartment look at me longingly, going, "But you haven't read us yet."
You should definitely buy as many hardcover books for your Brooklyn apartment as possible.
Yeah. Shouldn't you be moving these into storage? But I haven't read them yet. New York City living is kind of rough when it comes to wanting to buy book after book after book before you finish the last one.
Our house has built-in bookshelves.
Yeah. I live in South Carolina. Every house here is a mansion. I'm a millionaire. Blah, blah, blah.
All of that is true. Everything you just
I go to the doctor when I'm sick.
That's not true.
That was a line from It's Always Sunny. I think Charlie says that to somebody. He's like, "Oh, look at me. I'm a millionaire. I go to the doctor when I'm sick." That's always been one of my favorite lines from that show for some reason. So Hellboy, I'm definitely going to start reading it. Jack Kirby's Fourth World, definitely on like my reading list of things to read. Reading a list of things to read. How do I coin these phrases? So anything else, Nick? What else you got going on?
I read Seconds last weekend on Sunday.
That's the new Brian Lee O'Malley book, right?
Yep, and it is pretty great. It's kind of, I mean, it's a departure from Scott Pilgrim, but there he has gotten even better as an artist. The story, it's a done in one. It's not a series or anything, but it's really great. I liked it a lot. I'm looking forward to reading it again.
Was it fun in the way that like Scott Pilgrim was?
I mean, it's actually more serious. It is kind of, I don't know. It's definitely more serious. There's a lot of things that Scott Pilgrim touched on, like aspects of like getting older and how your friendships change and all that kind of stuff that I think some people might not really notice in Scott Pilgrim because of just sort of the outside, like, novelty aspect of it with the video game stuff and the fighting and all that. But this has sort of like a more supernatural bent, but it is also like basically, you know, the mistakes that you make and trying to rectify them in like, it basically like looking back at what you've done and regretting it and trying to change it and it not really working out because you're taking shortcuts, I guess, is better. That's the best I can explain it without just spoiling the whole thing. But yeah, it's about being an adult and kind of screwing things up and then kind of realizing you're in a place.
Okay, that sounds cool. When I saw that you had read it on, I think, Goodreads, I was like, ooh, I gotta read that.
Yeah.
Did you pick that up at HeroesCon?
No, it actually came out last week while we were at the beach, and I was hoping there would be a bookstore nearby, and the closest Barnes & Noble was in Virginia, so I just ordered it through Amazon, and it got here, and it was here when I got home.
Okay, I thought you had it delivered to the beach.
I thought about it, but I didn't.
That would have been some badass stuff. Like, I'm getting books delivered to my beach house. All right, well, I guess that wraps up this week's episode of the Tuesday Night Comics podcast. Nick, I want to thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much.
You were very last minute. You were very. Dave had to cancel at the last minute because a family emergency had come up, and you were so nice to step in, and you have convinced me to start reading Hellboy.
Nice.
Yeah, I say that, you know.
You say that. A year from now, we'll have the same conversation.
You've also convinced me to come visit you in Charleston.
A year from now, we'll be having the same.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. Dave, I will probably be back next week. Nick, you're welcome to come on the show anytime you want. Dave and I both loved having all three of us on the show last week. I definitely want to do that again.
Everybody was drunk.
Yeah, that might have made it go better. But yeah, so thanks for listening, everybody. Keep reading your comic books. And if you agree with Nick and think I should read Hellboy, you know, let me know. All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.